Dozens of Israeli soldiers invaded on Thursday at dawn various Palestinian neighborhoods and towns in occupied East Jerusalem, searched homes and attacked families, wounding several Palestinians and kidnapped 12. The soldiers also fired rubber-coated steel bullets inside an invaded home, wounding one Palestinian. Soldiers stormed and violently searched homes in Al-Asawiyyah town in Jerusalem and kidnapped 12 young Palestinians, including children, local sources reported. Late on Wednesday night, Israeli soldiers kidnapped two Palestinians in Ain Abus village south of the northern West Bank city of Nablus and violently assaulted another Palestinian in Madaba village south of Nablus. The Palestinian Prisoner Society, PPS, has reported that Israeli soldiers kidnapped 562 Palestinians, including dozens of children, mainly in occupied East Jerusalem in September. The PPS said that soldiers kidnapped 294 Palestinians, mainly children, in Jerusalem, and that most of them were taken prisoner after Israeli extremists and soldiers intensified their invasions into Al-Aqsa Mosque. Elsewhere, the Israeli army issued Thursday a military order occupying a Palestinian home in Halhul town, north of Hebron, in the southern part of the occupied West Bank. The property owner lives in the United States. Media sources in Hebron said that soldiers occupied the home of Fathi Muhammad Mar'ib in the northern part of Halhul town and that the illegally seized property is located next to Karmeit Sur illegal colony built on privately Palestinian lands. The sources said that Mar'ib lives in the United States and that the soldiers stormed the property while his nephew Nidal Samih Karaja was there and handed him an order informing the family that the military will be taking control of the property for military considerations. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Thursday, October 1st, 2015 news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Banmura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Doug McVeigh and Robin Ryan. The producer is myself, Sam Bowman. Special thanks to Jim Thompson and Sarika Mehta. Our engineer is Matthew Olson. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen or something else to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Sarika Mehta. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Ani and Lynn host Positively Revolting, a variety of topics from an eco-feminist and anarcho-feminist perspective. At 9, on Political Perspectives, we hear activist and KBOO host Joanne Hardesty keynote address at KBOO's annual meeting held this past Sunday. At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We'll hear Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, Intersections Radio looks at healthy living and social justice with U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, Deanna Fay, and featuring another deaf South Asian American story. Thanks to all KBOO members, including those of you who pledged during our recent membership drive. You can still contribute by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
And stay tuned now for Sarika's in-depth look at a new research center for the deaf in India and how it fits into the larger history of deaf rights in that country. Good night, Sarika.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, Matthew.
Good night. KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
For years, India's deaf community has been fighting for their right to language, and they finally won. The Indian Sign Language Research and Training Center, the ISLRTC, is an academic institution that promotes the use of Indian Sign Language, deaf culture, and bilingualism for professionals who work with deaf children. But more than that, it's a symbol of deaf pride in India and stands as a validation for their language and existence. Back in April, I reported this story in depth on KBOO's Political Perspectives show. Since 2007, the community has been fighting to run this center autonomously. However, on April 21st, the Indian government decided the center should be run by the NIHH, the National Institute of the Hearing Handicapped. This is the government agency which focuses on deaf needs, but purely from a medically based rehabilitative model. This decision unexpectedly came the day before my report, despite strong objection from the deaf Indian community. Following the decision, I spoke with Madan Vasishtha, chief officer of the ISLRTC and author of two memoirs, Deaf in Delhi and Deaf in DC. With 85 deaf leaders from all over India, Madan met with five cabinet ministers in New Delhi for 2 days on March 15th and 16th. The ministers assured the deaf community that they would support autonomy for the ISLRTC. But on April 21st, the Indian government granted control of the ISLRTC to the NIHH. Over the next month, deaf Indians fundraised and rallied to stage a demonstration in Delhi. Just before his trip to California, Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, overturned the decision and granted approval for the ISLRTC to be run autonomously. It was a huge win for India's deaf community. On Tuesday, I spoke with Madan Vasishtha about the protest, the fight, and what this all means for India's deaf community. Nirja Vasishtha interpreted our conversation. How many people showed up for the protest, and how did you get the word out? How did you get deaf people from all over India rallying for this cause?
Great question.
That's a great question.
Technology?
Oh, technology. Most deaf people don't have laptops or access to internet, but almost all deaf people have a small phone. Some have smartphones, some sort of regular phones, but they use WhatsApp. It's very popular in India, and every deaf person has a WhatsApp account. So we would make a kind of chain. So about 100 members can be in one account. So then that would spread, and then those folks would spread to another group. And so the word spread very quickly. It was a great thing. And for some people who couldn't read or write English, they'd use video and use sign language and post it. It was so interesting. Sometimes you get 50 videos, so it spread very quickly.
And how many people showed up for the protest?
We don't really have a count. There are a lot of different assumptions. The minimum was about 3,000. Some say 10,000. So you could say 3,000 to 10,000. It could be 5,000. But if you look at the pictures, the streets for several kilometers were full of people, and the roads were stopped or blocked. There was no traffic. So it was a good number.
And what were the demands that you had staged for the protest?
The demands were to establish ISLRTC as an autonomous organization. And it must include voice and participation from the deaf community.
So now, 5 months later, the Indian government has finally approved this, that the ISLRTC will be run autonomously. What exactly does this mean?
So before I said what it meant, I forgot to mention some important efforts. We set up a steering committee for 11 people who worked really hard and brainstormed every day, and I steered that, and we discussed what to do. So we decided to set up meetings meetings with important people. And four or five people would meet and explain the difference between deaf people who use sign language and the deaf people who use oral speech. Because government people really have no idea what the difference is. Deaf people are deaf people. Why do you need to have something separate? So this was slowly, people began to understand why deaf people want that. So people think it's like a crazy idea, but once some important people started to understand that and they started explaining to other people, that's what really helped. So then that sort of went all the way to the prime minister, understanding why the center must be separate. And the prime minister, before flying here to America, he approved this. So he was involved through his cabinet. And now, that means that the center's been established, but in the Indian way, you know, that's supposed to be tomorrow. And in India, tomorrow can be 5 months or 6 months. So every day we're kind of waiting. But we've also, in the same time, we've developed a 20-page proposal about how to run it, how to organize committees, who's going to be on those, who are the members of those committees. So all that information is being prepared, and we're going to give that. So they will have a roadmap in front of them, and hopefully they'll follow that roadmap.
When is the center, that is to say, running autonomously, when is this approval supposed to go into effect?
So there's no specific date. So the bureaucrats in India say soon, tomorrow or next week we'll be finished. But that could mean several months. So we really have to push for it. It should be 2 or 3 months. But I think it's going to be more than that. There's a lot of paperwork. They have to set up a national committee. And that starts hiring people. They have rules that you have to advertise a position for 3 months and so on. So it can be a pretty long process and might be pretty long before it's operating. Maybe 6 months, could be a year. But it's better late than never.
That's true. You had mentioned at the beginning, before we started our conversation, that media has not been covering this issue very much. Talk more about that.
This is sad because the attitude in India is very negative towards deaf people. We try to get the attention from TV, newspaper. And the newspaper did print a story that was very, very supportive, but no TV station came to video. They just come if there's a big leader that comes. So we don't really get enough publicity as we should have. But everyone in India knows it, but outside of India, they don't. So we started a Facebook page and using the internet to explain to the world that we've succeeded, so people know that something big has happened in India. In my opinion, this will have more impact than DPN or the Deaf President Now movement at Gallaudet. Because this is going to impact over 8 million deaf people. Gallaudet impacted less than 1 million people. But it had so much publicity here in America, but not in India.
Right. That's a good point. How do you think this movement will impact both deaf Indians and hearing Indians working collaboratively and collectively?
First, for the deaf, the big impact is, well, we can. This is very important, especially in India, where deaf people are always oppressed. And so there's that feeling we can fight the government. We can pave the way for the future and struggle and work for and ask for more things for the future. For hearing people, this might be the first time that they really saw deaf people can stand up for themselves and make demands. And in the future, they will accept their equality with hearing people. I also think this will create more openings, opportunities for education, more jobs, more doors will open up so that deaf people will have an equal opportunity. And hearing people will get closer and closer to understanding deaf people and deafness better.
As we come to a close, do you have any other remarks you want to share with our audience?
I just want to say I'm so thrilled about this, that this is the first time all over in India have come together and have fought for a cause. This is a great thing. It's a historical, groundbreaking event. And it's going to lead to many more wonderful things happening. All over India, deaf people are celebrating this. There was a World Deaf Day just this week where they changed it to Celebration Week. So there were fireworks and parades, dancing, parties. They're really celebrating. I'm getting so many pictures every day. And I'll send you some later, and perhaps you can show some of these still photos.
That was Madan Vasishta, Chief Officer of the Indian Sign Language Research and Training Center and author of two memoirs, Deaf in Delhi and Deaf in DC. He joined me by Skype, and Nirja Vasishta interpreted our conversation. For KBOO News, I'm Sarika Mehta.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 p.m. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.